George, can you explain me what's your role today at Ericsson? What's your job? What's your main mission? So we can have the context of this interview.
I work for learning and development, which belongs to people group function. And I'm the head of sales enablement programs, among which the key program which I drive is Set to Win, our new sales proficiency program.
Uh-huh. Great. Thank you. And can you explain me a little bit more about your background? I've seen on your LinkedIn profile that you've worked for main telecom companies like Motorola, Vodafone, Ericsson now. But can you just, I've seen that you have a specific composition of, your career is based on sales and training roles. So it's very interesting for me because for somebody who is working for sales enablement, I think it's a very good background to understand both.
Well, I have a 30 years work experience, and more or less, it is these 30 years have three are split in three decades, roughly. The first part was about sales, business to business sales for telecom companies like Vodafone, like Motorola, Alcatel. Then the second part had to do with sales training. So I was delivering sales training, and I was responsible for the business development of a sales training, sales consulting company, Hathwaite. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with Hathwaite, the spin selling company. Mm-hmm. And the third part of my career, the last 7 years, are with Ericsson, which is into sales learning and development.
Okay.
It is close, of course, with being and selling sales training and consulting, but it has also many differences because you are more into the designing part than into the delivering part.
Uh-huh. Okay. And for somebody who understands very well sales performance, sales objectives, and business, what is for you today the most important mission of L&D professional? Especially in the sales enablement.
I don't need to think twice. The answer is very simple. The key objective today is to bring business impact, create value for the sales community, and help them to see business impact. This is the key thing. And this is where we're measured in nowadays.
Exactly. So, one of my questions was actually this: how L&D can have more impact on business today, on sales specifically, and maybe we can start with this, and then you can explain more about your program, Set to Win. How do you measure the impact of your sales programs on business?
Well, two different questions. Mm-hmm. And two questions that are more difficult to answer than the previous one. Mm-hmm. The answer is not that simple, and it's not that obvious either. I would say that a contemporary sales learning consultant has to understand the market, has to be in contact with his counterparts of other major corporations. When we were building the Set to Win sales proficiency program that I was talking about before, I met with counterparts of mine from Oracle, from SAP, from IBM, from CenturyLink, from Volvo Cars, from Schneider Electric, trying to understand how they do things today. The third thing that needs to do is to be in close contact and communication and work close with the sales community and the sales leaders in particular. I think these three ingredients, customer and market understand what are the learning, the global learning trends, and understand the needs and wants of the sales community and the sales leaders in particular, are the key ingredients for building make impact. Now, how you measure this impact? I don't want to get in details of the Kirkpatrick model that you're familiar with and all the sales enablement practitioners are, but I think that the important thing is to understand that people do change their behaviors, do get new skills, and they see impact. Now, ideally, you see this impact in numbers. Mm-hmm. Which is not an easy thing to do. You know, and I know, and everybody knows that it's not easy to isolate training and learning and easy tell that it is that brought the impact. It cannot, but if
there are many factors impacting the outcome.
But I think that if you have from the sales community solid testimonials telling you that what you do has helped them, it was not the critical, of course, factor, but it contributed in and helped them in winning their new deals. This is what you need, and this is what you want, and what people should be looking for.
Okay, very interesting. We have. I would like to come back just on a few things you said. The one that I found very interesting, and I can confirm absolutely, the one you mentioned about the peer interaction. You know, when we are L&D in a company, we have sometimes a bit of isolated feeling because we are working closely with HR, other HR functions, with sales, but it's usually one person doing all the different roles, and we don't have that much opportunity to exchange with people on our preoccupations and problematics. And it's like you said, you interact with your peers in similar companies. This is what you said. The people who work, your peers who work in the companies in the similar context, when you can exchange on the approaches, learning tendencies. Okay. And could you explain me more what's your approach, how you develop your network and the interaction exchange with your peers? What's your approach? How you do this win-win situation, because we are all very busy and you work, like you said, 12 hours a day. How do you do this? How you develop your peers network?
Well, I don't mean to brag, but I'm a natural networker. Mm-hmm. Okay, I value my network of friends and peers and colleagues, and it's something that I work hard to maintain it. Mm-hmm. So some of my contacts come from my background and the companies that I worked with or I sold to or I had as vendors or and and a leverage of it. Mm-hmm. Another good source for networking for me has been the Association of Professional Sales of the UK, mm-hmm. where I have had the opportunity to meet with great people from sales enablement. And sometimes it is not the ones that I know who have the answers that I'm looking for, but they can network me with someone else that does.
Okay, great. Yeah, very interesting. We feel that you nurture this network. It's yeah. a maybe natural skill that you have, but you work on it, you develop it.
I like it to start with.
Yes.
And I work on it. I develop it, definitely.
Thank you. It's very, very interesting. And just I would like to come back to the another...
Excuse me, I want to interrupt. This is the contemporary way to work also internally in your company. Because working for a global corporation, a global matrix corporation, you have to do this internally too, not only... with your external network, right? It's pretty much the same thing that you need to do.
Absolutely. I see this and I feel this need. So let's come back just to the third X that you mentioned. It's close contact with sales leaders, sales enablement. So can you just elaborate a little bit more on this? Because imagine the people like me, for example, who don't have this sales previous education or experience, it can be difficult to use the vocabulary and the interest that sales population and leaders have. So what would be your recommendation for somebody who is not initially, in sales, how to nurture this relationship with the sales leaders and top managers and sales enablement professionals inside the company?
Yeah. Ivana, I think if there is whenever and wherever, not only in this case, but everywhere, there is an experience deficit, there is one way to compensate that. Learning and developing. Learning and developing and practicing. What I mean is you need someone needs to participate in conferences, read good sales books, start meeting with these sales leaders, sales people, maybe in the beginning with having calls that are less risk.
Uh-huh.
What I mean is it's not the same meeting with an account manager of your company in France and meeting with the executective sales director.
Uh-huh.
Right? But having calls with a junior entry level, maybe account manager, you uh-huh. get the hang of it. You will start getting the right language and terminology that you're looking for. Then you'll be more prepared for having more calls with more senior guys.
This absolutely makes sense to start progressively and work more on the onboarding of salespeople. This is what I do often.
It's pretty much the same thing that we tell people when they go to a new sales methodology training. I mean, you go to challenger sales training, for example, or you go to spin selling training, uh-huh. and you have to apply some new behavior, some new skills, and some new processes. Don't try this with an account which is of critical importance for you or mm-hmm. for a business opportunity which is a must-do thing. Try it with something easier.
Less risky. If you fail or if you do some error, you can learn from it and then build on this skill.
Exactly right.
Makes sense a lot for me. Okay, and What would be the characteristics of the successful sales learning program today?
Now, I think I will go back to what I said before. It has to bring business impact. In the end of the day, it has to be big business impact. But in order to reach this end goal, let's say, this end objective, people have to feel engaged in the training room. I mean, no matter if it is a physical training room or a virtual training, they have to be engaged in. So the content has to be attractive. The content has to be contemporary. The trainer has to be someone that has people's respect and the second thing, so people have to leave there, have to be engaged in and leave the training satisfied, very important. And then the next key thing is follow up. If somebody leaves a training, no matter how good the trainer or the training is, and how pleased he is, going to apply these new skills and behaviors on his or her own, most possibly, if he or she has no support, won't make it. Because most possibly, he will try the new behaviors, the new things, they won't work in the beginning, and he will go back to his comfort zone. So it is the point that he needs coaching, he needs follow-up, there's got to be some post-training activity. And if this happens, helping him to apply this new stuff on the job, then I think business impact will be there.
Yes, this makes me think about this, you know, the principle of learning, of lasting change that we want to obtain for people is the repetitive spaced learning. You know, if you want to have long lasting change in the behavior, you need to have not one shot training or learning, but you need to space it to repeat it in time, so you can come back with maybe different formats coaching and then check on a follow up on this change. Okay, interesting. Let's come back a little bit more on the L&D role and this very global and diverse role that today L&D have, and very important, I think, as the companies are changing in this changing context and the difficult complex. How would you describe what are the most important skills that global L&D needs to have today to have the impact on business, on company culture, on learning culture in the company, on long life on the company? Maybe you can share a bit of your insight about the company where you work, but also the previous companies. What would be for you the main skills, the main mindset?
While you're asking your questions, I've been thinking a little bit, and I think I would say that I would see two key things. One, growth mindset. You cannot preach and lecture learning without walking the talk yourself. So you have to keep on changing yourself, developing yourself, learning yourself, growing yourself, and make sure you show this and demonstrate this growth mindset. So that's one key thing. The other has to do with what we discussed before, to demonstrate partnership leadership. People cannot work in silos anymore. They cannot work in their own beautiful department. There are not things like that. They have to work across these global corporations, partner with people. We're not talking big teams anymore. We're talking very small teams. Many, many senior people work on their own, but actually they work, they look like they work on their own, but they don't, because they work cross-organizational with many different units, function, people, with more seniors, less seniors, and they have to show energy, show partnership, show leadership, show partnership leadership, energize all the network, and put things in motion. I think those two are the key things: growth mindset and partnership leadership.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm thinking about those days, about, you know, all the leadership programs and the different kinds of leadership, and this what you are talking about, this partner leadership, or cross leadership. I don't know how we could call it, but you know, there is the leadership when you need to lead people, the people, yeah, managers, the leaders, but there are so many leadership, cross leadership roles today in the company, and yeah, and at Sigfox we have many of them. You know, it's exactly what you are talking about, the roles when you need to mobilize a lot, a big number of people for your project in order, yeah, to have the impact, the product, the portfolio managers, the project managers, L&D
HR role, business partners,
HR business partners. There are so much leadership skills in this sense, like you were explaining, and then the growth mindset. It's absolutely so, the desire to learn and to improve our skills. That's absolutely, absolutely makes sense. And this is, thank you for this insight. Okay, so let's move on. Let's move a little bit on, maybe on your more personal thing. I don't know how you would describe the mission of your blog. I know that you write, and I read your blog. I found it really interesting. I've shared few articles selling like a bee and others on Sigfox internal platform. I really find this interesting. So what represents for you your blog? Why do you write?
First of all, because I like writing. Mm-hmm. I like expressing myself writing. Yes. And you can see this in me in many areas. For example, ever since we started having the mobile phones back in the early 90s, I stopped calling people. I was using SMSs. So imagine now. I mean, I was calling less, I would say, using SMSs. But now I don't call at all. I don't use my phone for voice. I use the social media and the WhatsApp, all these kind of applications, and I communicate the writing. This is how I like expressing myself, writing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one thing is this: I like writing. The second thing is that I think it's something that helps my personal brand. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Is it, someone sees your LinkedIn profile or your resume, or don't they understand more about you, your experience, your knowledge, your skills, your writing skills, your everything, your communication skills, if they read your ideas, your perceptions, if they read your blog, your article? Mm-hmm. So I think this is one very good way to show who I am, and mm-hmm. and help my personal branding.
Very interesting. I can completely refer to this because I write also. I mean, I didn't write for 4 years since I started working at Fox, but now I really feel the need to come back. And I don't know you, but I feel that writing helps me think. And
sure, of course.
It helps me think. It helps me, like you, express myself and generate my ideas and be more creative in my job. And it's a fabulous tool for learning also, because as soon as I read a book or learn something new, if I try to, you know, construct ideas around it, and it makes me think about what I'm experiencing, it's incredible leverage, like you said, for improving ourselves. And
And also it's a way to and I go to the other topic we were discussing before, to maintain and expand your network.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Because when you have your network reading your blog, or when you communicate your blog articles to your network, it is a way to stay in touch with your network and develop it further.
Yeah, exchange with others who have similar interests like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And bring the exchange on a different level, I believe, you know, because you can exchange on much more profound topics.
Correct.
Ideas.
Absolutely.
And develop your way of thinking on much higher level, I believe.
Absolutely.
Nice, interesting. So let's move on. I have just two more questions. I think we will be on time. So you mentioned the social media. They are so present now in our lives, you know, then they can, for good and for the bad things. But I believe that it's an incredible tool to connect with one of the most intelligent people on the planet, you know, like LinkedIn, for example. You can follow up very influential people like the CEOs of the companies we admire, or, you know, the writers, or I don't know. So my next question is, who are you following on LinkedIn, Twitter? Who are the people you admire, or you like to follow, or you want to interact with?
Good question. I'm not sure there are many people that I follow in that sense, but I remember that I used to follow, unfortunately he passed away, Jack Welch, the legendary CEO of General Electric. Mm-hmm. I currently started following after I attended one of his speeches half a year ago in a Paris conference, Josh Bersin.
Mm-hmm.
From Bersin and Deloitte, who is definitely one of the HR thought leaders.
Mm-hmm.
After again attending, you see, it's not something that I do for no reason proactively. I tend to meet some people that I get to admire, to I get to respect their work, and then I follow. Example. I attended a DGRID. DGRID is our learning experience platform. Attended the DGRID, a presentation of DGRID of Kathy Palmer, who is the HR head of DGRID, and she used to be the HR head of Sun Micro, of LinkedIn, of Yahoo. I admired her. I liked a lot the way she spoke and the insights she shared, and ever since I follow.
Mm-hmm.
A year ago, I attended the speech here in Paris of Susan Fowler, who has several books on motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And she works, she's one of the partners, if I'm not mistaken, of Ken Blanchard. you know, mm-hmm. the leadership consulting company, Ken Blanchard. Mm-hmm. And Susan is someone that I respected a lot and I kind of follow. And I also like, that's not on LinkedIn, that's on Facebook and Twitter. I mm-hmm. like following some sports personalities.
Uh-huh.
And I will start with a favorite of mine, who is a compatriot of yours, Djoko.
Uh-huh.
Novak Djokovic.
You like him?
a lot. He's he used to be my favorite. Now he's my second favorite after the Greek Stefanos Tsitsipas started becoming a top tennis player. But Djoko is really great, and I think he's also a great leader.
Yeah, he has an incredible mental force.
Yes. Mentally he's the strongest, I think, tennis player and one of the strongest athletes in the world.
It's many people explain his success by the capacity of him to manage the thoughts, beliefs, I think, and the mental strength. So it's interesting. Thank you for sharing your favorite people on the internet. And you've mentioned already, that's my last question, you mentioned books, sales enablement books. And my question is, do you like to read?
A lot.
What do you read right now, for example, and if you can elaborate on this?
Yeah, well, I read it. Usually I read three kinds of books.
Mm-hmm.
I read business books, and mm-hmm. one book that I recently read and I appreciate it is The Barcelona Way of Damien Hughes, who mm-hmm. explains what are the key ingredients for having a team with a winning culture.
Mm-hmm.
Damien Hughes has some very good books. This is probably the fourth book of his that I'm reading, and then he's real good. I strongly recommend you to read this. And I like reading historical novels.
Yes.
And the third, which is something that I have been doing for many, many years, I love reading crime novels, nothing to do with business, but I find very exciting reading crime novels. And the last years, I think the top crime novels authors are from the Nordics, Scandinavians.
Uh-huh.
Like Jo Nesbø from Norway, Lars Kepler, Stieg Larsson from Sweden, Henning Mankell from Sweden. Those are some of my favorites. Also, there is a Greek-American that I like in particular, uh-huh. George Pelecanos.
Ah, okay. I don't know him. I will check on this. Interesting. Yeah. It seems you read quite a lot. If you could choose one book or few books that changed in some way your life or your worldview on life or on work, what would you could pick one and recommend to people to read?
Well, I think I would, I will have to pick, Spin Selling, mm-hmm. the bestseller of Neil Rackham, which is the sales methodology that prevailed in the previous 30 years. And it is the book that I had to read when I turned from sales to sales training 16, 17 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was my understanding of this was probably one of the reasons that Ericsson also hired me.
Uh-huh.
So spin selling is a big part of my life and the second half of my career.
Okay.
And I think if I pick one book, it will definitely be this one.
Okay, well, I will absolutely check on it because it seems very, very important for you and anyway, it's good, would be a good way to learn.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Good, well, thank you. We finished with the questions, so thank you a lot. I will stop the recordings. Thank you a lot.
Thank you, Ivana. Thank